The Amish Menorah, an anthology from the men of Amish fiction, coming up next right here on this special edition of The Right Stuff. Stay tuned. Queen of Wednesday Night, Parker J. Thank you so much for joining me. I am so very excited to showcase to you The Amish Menorah. It is an anthology from the men of Amish fiction. And I know some of you may be thinking, what? The Amish Menorah? Do you have any idea what you're talking about? Well, that is just one of the stories that makes this anthology so unique. And I cannot wait to tell you all about it. We're going to be talking to the publisher, Elk Publishing, as well as the authors Patrick Craig, Willard Carpenter, Thomas Nye, Amos Wise, and possibly Murray Purr if he comes on board. I know he's busy today, but we are going to be talking to the authors of this wonderful anthology, and we definitely want to hear from you. So feel free to weigh in by calling in at 646-668-8485, then press that 1 to be live on air, or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag right stop. With your questions or comments, we're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guest on the Right Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
Are you a reader looking for more compelling Christian fiction? Maybe something a little more edgy or a bit more real? Are you tired of most Christian fiction shying away from the truth and settling for a rose-tinted view of the world and its issues? Or are you an author who has a compelling story to tell, but you're afraid it doesn't jive with today's brand of Christian or secular fiction? Are you tired of Christian publishers telling you that your content is too edgy? Or maybe you've tried submitting your content under the radar to secular publishers, only to be told your themes are a bit too religious? We invite you to take a look at the Crossover Alliance. We are an online publishing company that specializes in edgy Christian speculative fiction with Christian themes and real-world content. Our company is formed from authors and readers just like you who are breaking into the mainstream and Christian markets with this compelling genre. Head over to the www.thecrossoveralliance.com for all the details on who we are, what we do, and what we accept. Right now, if you sign up for our email newsletter, you'll receive a free digital copy of our first short story anthology. Check us out today and help us spread the word about the Crossover Alliance, where light shines brighter in the darkness.
How do fantasy and sci-fi help make us into better people? And how can Christians best glorify our Lord Jesus Christ as we enjoy these stories? Also, where can you find the best fantastical Christian novels? Yes, they do exist, and we know exactly where to find them.
From the creators of Lorehaven magazine and from biblical Christian storytellers around the world comes a new podcast for readers of amazing stories. We call it Fantastical Truth.
I'm E. Stephen Burnett.
And I'm Zachary Russell. Our mission is to find biblical truth in fantastic stories. We apply the wonders of these imaginary worlds to the real world our Creator has called us to serve.
Toward that chief end, we will find the best novels by Christian authors, fantasy, science fiction, and beyond. Together, we will explore these stories in light of the gospel, and we'll join these authors and other creative friends on this joyful journey to find the happiness and holiness of Jesus by exploring his gift of truthful imagination.
Please subscribe at lorehaven.com or on podcast players everywhere.
Join us in this eternal quest to seek and find fantastical truth.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to a special edition of The Right Stuff. I have the honor of showcasing The Amish Menorah, an anthology by the men of Amish fiction, presented to us by Elk Lake Publishing. My apologies before the break. is Elk Publishing. And I'm so excited because this is a special day for Elk Lake, and I'm going to tell you about that in a minute. But I'm just excited to share this anthology with you. This anthology is not like the other Amish fiction books that you may read. This anthology is hard-hitting, but it's also sweet and temperate, gentle. There are some twists and turns, wonderful stories, some humorous moments. But it is not like a lot of the Amish fiction you read. And I think that's what makes this so unique in the Amish fiction world. And I'm so glad to be able to showcase that with you today. So make sure you go online and pick up your copy of The Amish Menorah and Other Stories by going to Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. And with me, I'm going to introduce the proprietor of Elk Lake Publishing, Deb Haggerty, along with Patrick Craig, Amos Wise, Thomas Nye, and Will Carpenter. Guys, how are you doing today?
Wonderful.
Wonderful.
It's so good to have all of you with me. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedules to be with us as we showcase this wonderful anthology. And I just wanted to real quickly have all the authors just give a quick shout out to our listeners, because I know some of our listeners are fans of yours. So let's say a hi, Patrick, Amos, Tom, and Willa. Just say hi really quickly and just say, hey, I'm Patrick. Hi, I'm Amos, and so forth and so on. So, Patrick, you go first.
Hey, hey, I'm Patrick Craig, and I want to thank all of you folks out there that have supported this project and supported all of us in our individual projects. So thanks so much to all of you, and hopefully we can keep on going and produce more books for you.
And then, Amos, your turn.
Hi, this is Amos Wise. I appreciate everybody out there who's listening, all those who've supported us again with this really what we hope to be a meaningful compilation, as well as rumor has it another one on the way. Glad to be here.
Tom, what about you? Go ahead and say hello.
Okay, Thomas Nye here. Thank you so much, Parker, for having us, and I just want to thank Deb Haggerty from Elk Lake for putting up with us guys. We're a little bit ornery, all of us, and we've had a lot of fun putting this together, and it'll be fun to talk with you about it.
And Will, go ahead and say hello to everybody.
I would like to, since she's here, I would like to thank Deb for publishing us. It's quite meaningful to me. This is my first traditional publish. And thank all the readers who have supported us in this endeavor and our individual endeavors. Thank you.
And Deb, I'm just so glad to have this conversation with you. We have the men on mute right now because I can't wait to get them all together to talk about the stories. But to our listeners out there, again, if you want to weigh in on our conversation, you can by simply calling in 646-668-8485 and press that 1 to be live on air, or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag WriteStuff with your questions or comments. And Deb, one of the things I want to start off this conversation, with a quote that I received from a listener of ours. And Carolyn from Kentucky says, when I asked the question, why do you like Amish fiction? She says, focus on God's will oftentimes. Show that even through practice, a simpler lifestyle, have the same problems, fears, hopes, and dreams, just like the rest of us. And Carolyn, thank you so much for joining in the conversation. So Deb, we have people who love Amish fiction, but what made you say, you know what, I want to bring these guys of Amish fiction who have their own careers, bring it together into this anthology? Tell us a little about how the project began.
Well, the project began when Patrick Craig approached me and said, we've got this wild idea where there's six of us and we think we'd like to put some stories together of real Amish fiction. And he clarified that by saying, you know, just what Carol's quote said, that Amish life is, even though a little bit simpler style, has some of the same concerns and problems that the rest of the world does. And I said, well, considering the fact that I don't normally like what we call cozy Amish fiction, I'd be interested in reading a couple of the stories and we'll go from there. And I fell in love with the stories, and the guys have been great to work with. So that's how the Amish menorah came to be.
There is often a call among Christian publishers and readers are demanding much more realistic fiction nowadays. Why do you think that is?
Realize that happily ever after rarely happens happily ever after, and that we have problems along the way. It's nice to have fictional characters who are going through some of the things that we're going through. Sometimes it's just having that other person who we can identify with, even though they're fictional. And sometimes we get clues on how we might handle similar situations. So I think Christian fiction has stopped being the fairy tale type of thing and has become a lot edgier and a lot more real. I know that's the kind I'm publishing these days.
And you just got to my next question, because I was going to ask, what type of fiction do you publish at Elk Lake Publishing? You can expand on that if you like.
Okay. I publish anything I like to read. It's one of the nice things mm-hmm. about owning the company. Everything from children's to middle grade, we're doing one of Patrick's middle grade series, to young adult to adult. Everything from science fiction and fantasy, the speculative fiction, visionary fiction type of books, to romance, to historical fiction, to westerns, to just about anything that catches my eye.
And I like the fact that you said, I like to publish things I like to read, because if you're not interested in it, you can't expect the reader to be interested in it as well, you know?
Exactly.
So, yeah, I love that. And I like the fact that you mentioned how, you know, you're in different genres. I think that's important. Too oftentimes, I just saw a book by the granddame of Christian fiction by Janet Oakey. And she and her daughter recently wrote a book, which is phenomenal. I remember reading Janet Oakey for a long time. And she was a trailblazer in her own right, because she actually heralded in Christian fiction, you know, but as times have changed and people want that time to change along with what's happening in the world, because the culture is constantly changing, becoming more negative toward Christianity. And we live in a post-truth society where it doesn't matter if it's true. I just want to feel good about the decisions that I make. And so we have to respond to that as well. And so with Elk Lake Publishing, I like the fact that you are expanding into different genres that people are going to read. Now, I'm not saying they're going to be off the wall crazy or anything like that, you know, something strange. You know, I do have publishers that do print that, but that's for another subject for another time. But, you know, you want to just really answer the call of the world. And so when you were thinking about creating Elk Lake Publishing, what was that defining moment for you where you said, this is a calling that I have to do?
I was working for the previous owner of Elk Lake Publishing, who became very ill and was going to have to basically give up the company. And my husband and I prayed about it. And I said, well, why don't you sell it to us? Because my calling has been to come alongside authors and take a lot of new authors as well as experienced authors and take the words that God's given them and help put it out to the public in the most professional fashion that we can, so that God's words get to those who need to hear them. So that's how we've built the company. And we've grown from about, I think when I bought the company, we had around 60 authors. And now we have close to 200. So God is blessing the ministry tremendously.
You know, I love hearing that, because today is a special day for you. Tell us what today is.
It is. Well, 4 years ago, this month is when I purchased Elk Lake Publishing. And it's been a wild ride in those 4 years, but we've had a great time and we've met some great authors and I think published some great books.
The Amish Menorah is definitely one of those books, Deb, and thank you for letting me just speak to you directly. I'm going to bring the guys on in a couple of minutes, and we're all going to have this wonderful chat about the Amish Menorah. And what I liked about it was that I'm not the biggest fan of Almost Fiction. I don't read too many of them. I only read Willard's because I know Willard, you know. So I was like, I know Willard, so I'll read his book. And he's a phenomenal writer, you know. But I was a little leery of reading, like, oh, my gosh, I hope I enjoy this. I remember thinking that. But then I was like, oh, my gosh, these books are so good. These Amish people have the same problems we have. I remember thinking that as I was reading the various stories in the anthology. Do you think that is what makes the anthology unique, is that it reflects the realism of Amish while also depicting the simpler lifestyle that they choose to lead?
I think that is true. And in some cases, it shows how misunderstood the Amish are by the general public. One of the stories goes into that in quite some detail. But the best thing for me was, and what makes this so unusual, is that it was written by six guys. Most people feel that Amish writers are female, and this is six rough and ready guys who wrote some beautiful stories.
It's interesting because I write sweet romance. I write the unicorns and candy cane stuff. So it's funny that when I read this, I was thinking, can men, because there is a bias, which is very true, that men can't write romance and men can't softer, gentler tales. But within these tales, these men were so well equipped with seeing life in their own way. And that was, I found that extremely fascinating, particularly in Patrick Craig's story, The Amish Menorah, which we're going to talk about in a minute. You know, he depicts this love story that's beautiful. And I'm sitting there like, oh my gosh, you know, mind you, I was never one of those people who said men can't write romance. I didn't say that, but there's a general idea. I know some romance readers won't even read a man's book if he writes romance. They won't even read it because they say he can't write romance. But these men definitely are oddballs in the industry. They're definitely oddballs in the industry, and I commend them for that. Plus, there's so much depth to it, and it's very, a lot of the stories are very cerebral. And that was something I found interesting, too, because I was expecting when I read Amish Fiction, you know, when I started to read it, besides Willard, I expected, you know, oh, they're what, a cut of chicken, you know, just something crazy, because I'm a city five girl. So I'm thinking, what, they're going to chop wood and cut chickens. But no, they're dealing with life questions. And that is the uniqueness.
You must have really appreciated the last story.
Yes, I did. I felt bad for her. Amish for a summer. I felt bad for her. I was like, I want your money, but not your life right now. I remember thinking that, like, oh my gosh, she's doing laundry by hand. But anyway, that's another subject for later on in the broadcast. And so for those of you listening in, we are talking to Deb Hackerty. We're also talking to the authors of the hot off the press, The Amish Menorah, an anthology of the six men of Amish Fiction. And what I want to do is encourage you to go ahead and pick up your copy of The Amish Menorah today by simply going to Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Deb and the author about the individual stories in this anthology. So if you want to weigh in on the topic, you know you can. Simply call in at 646-668-8485 and press that 1 to be live on air, or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag write stuff. These messages, stay tuned.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guest on the Write Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
God gives humans the gift of making amazing stories to glorify Him. At SpeculativeFaith.com, our ministry is to help fans explore fantasy, science fiction, supernatural stories, and beyond from an intentional and biblical Christian perspective. We share daily articles and have extensive archives tackling hot topics like end times beliefs, the art of writing, creative excellence in the Christian subcultures, discernment, sex, magic, Harry Potter, and space aliens and the Bible. If you are a parent or anyone else with a discriminating palate, our reviewers explore fantastical novels, movies, television, and games in light of God's beauty, goodness, and truth. Want to find Christian stories? The SpecFaith Library lists every fantastical novel we can find from a Christian author. It's all part of our mission to discern, engage, and enjoy fantastical human creativity in honor of our Creator, Jesus Christ. SpeculativeFaith.com, exploring fantastical stories for God's glory.
Engaging the culture's imagination through speculative fiction, The Untold Podcast produces audio fiction from a Christian worldview. Find us over at untoldpodcast.com, where we partner with authors to tell science fiction, fantasy, supernatural, and horror stories. Find links at untoldpodcast.com to subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, and a variety of other platforms. Each month we produce high-quality audio fiction that's free to download and free to listen. Our submissions are open, and we're always looking to add another great story to over 24 hours of narrative entertainment. Find all of our audio fiction over at www.untoldpodcast.com.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to a special edition of The Right Stuff. I'm so excited to have my guest with me today. We are talking about the hot off the press new anthology, The Amish Menorah. It's an anthology written by the six men of Amish fiction. And with me today is the publisher, Deb Hackerty from Elk Lake Publishing. We also have Patrick Craig, Amos Wise, Thomas Nye, and Willard Carpenter with me today. Before the break, we were talking to the publisher, particularly about this story and what drew her to it. But now we're going to get deep down and in depth into this anthology. I've had the opportunity to read the book, and let me tell you, this is not your regular Amish fiction. This is Amish fiction that has a lot of realism in it. It has beautiful storytelling. These men know how to write. So what I definitely want to do is encourage you to love on my brothers today. Go to Amazon.com and pick up your copy of The Amish Menorah, available there or wherever books are sold. So, gang, thank you for being with me on the show. Very excited to have you. And I do have your first question from our listener, R.D. Palmer, who's also a writer, as well as he wrote something regarding the Amish, too. So I'm glad that he's interacting with us today. But R.D. asked a question, and I'm going to have he just sent me a message. Of course, I'm interested, you know. He just sent me a question that says, how did the writers research the topics for Amish realism? And Patrick, since you're first, I'm going to go ahead and let you handle that, and then each of you can go down the line.
Okay, well, when I was doing a historical Amish fiction that I wrote called The Mennonite Queen, I did a lot of research about the Amish in Europe, and I discovered that there are no more Amish churches in Europe, and the last one was in 1937. It disbanded, and it was in Ixheim, Germany, which is right on the border between Germany and France, in the Rhineland. Excuse me. So as I was thinking about that, I realized this is right at the time that Hitler marched back into the Rhineland. There was all that preparation for World War II, and also Jewish people who were communists or who were agitators were already being rounded up and sent to Dachau. So the whole story just kind of came together, and then it was really easy to research, you know, what the Germans were doing in 37 and what the Amish were doing in that town and what the Jewish people were doing. And so I put that all together and ended up with The Amish Menorah.
And what about you, Amos?
Well, for me, I started writing Amish fiction about 2 years back and spent a great deal of time researching both the Amish and the Mennonite societies. What I found was it really mirrored. I was born in a small town in the Midwest. I was raised out there. Now, we waved at trains because you wanted people to think that you live in a friendly town. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of background that I was finding with the Amish people that I was meeting. These are just good, salt-of-the-earth kind of people. And from there, I went and wrote a series of novellas, and they were well-received. So I've just kind of kept up at it.
Tom, what was your approach?
Well, for me, it's a little different. I am almost 60, and I moved to an Amish community when I was 19, and I immediately became friends with young Amish people. And for one reason or another, my entire life, that next 40 years, I have spent very interconnected with Amish people in my community. And so really, I don't do research as such. I just have asked so many questions and had so many good experiences with my Amish neighbors. I just hardly a week goes by I'm not interacting with someone Amish. And so it's more real life experiences that I'm using as my basis for what I write.
And Willett, what about you?
I'm more close to that. I did a lot of research when I did Prodigal. That was about 10 years back. We live right outside of Honeybrook, which is an Amish community. For this story, A Cloudy Day, it most interestingly started with our daughter-in-law, Bianca. She's from Germany, and she came home with our son, and we were in Zerns, a farmer's market, and she was wondering if we had any more an Amish bakery inside there, and I said, yeah, and she walked down to the Amish bakery, and at times she would speak German to them, and she came back to me. She says, I know him. I said, you can't know him. That's not David, because she knew David when he and his wife had a bakery in the farmer's market. And I said, that's Jesse. She goes, no, I know Jesse. I said, that's not possible. You've been up in New York. And she says, no. He was on the British Broadcasting story, Trouble in Amish Paradise. I said, oh, and she goes, yeah, come with me. So I went down and said hi to Jess, and Bianca looked at Jess. She goes, I know you. And then he just smiles. He goes, how do you know me? And she said that I've seen you in Germany on the British Broadcasting story about you. And he just smiled and shook his head yes. And that is... And after that, Jess and I started talking about how he was excommunicated by his father, who was a bishop in his community. And the rest of it is fiction, very close to life. And I have been to Jesse's, my wife and I both have been to Jesse's, it's a Pentecostal church now. And they still rotate within the community from place to place to place. And the only thing that I embellished, it's fiction. And the part about his daughter, is made up. That came from... his daughter was, and I won't say it here publicly, but she was in the Middle East in a combat zone, spreading the word of Jesus Christ at the time. And I thought that was really interesting. And she went through all that. She did things that I would never do unless I was going in there with a combat unit, being an old soldier that I am. But she still couldn't talk to us without her mother being there, without her father being there. And I just thought that it was so ironic that she did all these things, but she couldn't talk to us. And her father could break away, but she couldn't break away. So I pulled stories out of that and made up James and Hannah, which... I am going to continue writing about. I've had readers
have some inspiration then
to continue their story. Yeah, so I'm going to continue their story into our Christmas
project.
Well,
don't tell us too much about it, Willard. Don't tell us too much about it, because I want to get our listeners to get interested in it, because I know I was interested in it. And for those of you listening, you can simply call in at 646-668-8485. Now, Deb, as you listen to the guys' response to this question that RD proposed, like where'd you get their Amish realism, how'd you research that, as a publisher, what are you thinking? Because this is going to be different from what's out there on the mainstream. So as a publisher, are you thinking, am I making too much of a risk? Because these aren't the cozy Amish romances and mysteries that people are used to. These are quite hard hitting. If you think about it, quite hard hitting, but they're different, and they depict the Amish almost in a. They take away that halo, I should say, from the Amish that's been a lot in Christian fiction. Like back in the day, you could have wrote like one Amish fiction book and sold 100,000 copies, you know. But some of that has changed over the years as people's taste change. So as a publisher, what are you thinking as you listen to these guys?
I was intrigued when I listened to the concept of the story because it wasn't Amish with a halo on it. Quite frankly, I would have to be quite entranced in order to publish one of the Halo Amish books. I liked the edginess. I liked the realism. I lived close to an Amish community for almost 10 years, and I know that real life impacts them as much as it does us. So I don't see it as a risk. I see it as an enticement for other people to buy the books who are looking for more real life.
Yeah, and I got to say, Patrick definitely took that halo off in his book, The Amish Menorah, in more ways than one, because I was a bit shocked. I said, oh my gosh, are you serious? You know, and so I can't wait to talk about it with you. So I want to read a comment because that's going to head our conversation here. And the first comment, the comment I want to read is why people like, you know, Amish fiction. Amy from, she is from, Erie, Pennsylvania. Amy says, because of the faith and forgiveness element. Also, it's a genre my mother and I both enjoyed, so it connects me to my mother, even though she has now passed away. Amy, thank you so much for joining in the conversation. And she says about the faith and forgiveness, but in these stories, these Amish people don't necessarily all forgive. And that was the first thing that came to mind as I read Patrick's story, which is about to go into the Amish Menorah. And so, Patrick, go ahead and give us, like, the quote-unquote two-sentence synopsis about, if you can, about the Amish Menorah.
Well, it's a story of a young man who has grown up in Ixheim, Germany. His father was Amish and his grandfather and his great-grandfather, and they all immigrated there from Switzerland. They're pure Aryan stock. They're farmers. But he has had to deal his whole life with his father's coldness, his father never giving him any support or encouragement. And when he told him he wanted to raise horses, his father told him, Amish farmers don't do that. You're a farmer. That's all you'll ever be. And so now his father has passed away, and he's hopefully planning, or the elders of the church are planning for him to take over as the elder when they retire. But that's not his dream. And so he's kind of struggling through life with that. And then the Germans march into his village. And so now he's faced with this thing where they pull all the Amish together and they tell them, we really like you because you're such pure Aryan blood and we want to enroll you in our new Nazi empire. And so a lot of them buy into that because of pride and arrogance. But Gerd doesn't buy in. And then one night he's out in his barn, you know, closing things down, and he finds a beautiful Amish or a beautiful Jewish girl who's hiding out. Her parents have been taken to Dachau. Her brother's been killed, and she's hoping to get across the border, but the border is locked down. So Gerd is immediately intrigued by her, and what they discover over the next few days, he says, I'll hide you. And he enlists his mother, and she agrees. And so they're hiding her. And over the next few days, they discover that both of them are stuck in the law. The Amish have this law called the Ordnung, which is a verbal law passed down, and that's what they live by. And they have gotten to the point where they almost believe that if they just keep the law, they can have right standing with God. Well, amazingly enough, that's what Jews who have not received Jesus as their Messiah believe the same thing. If they just keep the law, they will find right standing with God. So they're struggling with this, and they get captured and all that. And in the story, they finally end up discovering that they both have a Messiah, and it's the same man. It's the Lord Jesus Christ. And so that's the whole struggle. The whole issue is you're not saved by the law. You're saved by grace, by faith in the Lord Jesus Christ. And when I first started writing Amish books, I met a lady, Amish author Cicely Yoder. And
yes,
she had grown up Amish, but you know of her. And
yeah.
We had many conversations about this issue. And she said, I left the Amish church because of the grace issue. And she said, my biggest heartache is that so many of the Amish do not have a saving relationship with Jesus Christ because they depend on the law to save them. And so in all of my books, I always try to bring that point to the forefront. Somewhere in there, I'm going to tell you, the law will never save you. Only Jesus can do that. And so that's kind of the synopsis of the Amish menorah.
What's interesting is that the Amish menorah, which starts off this wonderful collection, is very atmospheric. And of interest to me was that it started in 1936. And a lot of people don't realize that the Nazi regime was coming into power a lot earlier than the 40s. And they were making inroads into these various countries along with their allies, like in China with Nanking, the rape of Nanking and stuff like that. And so I really appreciate mm-hmm. that historical aspect of the Amish menorah. And what I want to do, I want to read a quick excerpt. And for all of you gentlemen, I'm going to read my favorite part. I mean, not my favorite part, but like a part just to give our, because I read the favorite probably the whole book, but to give our listeners a chance to see the type of book that we have here. Now, my German is non-existent, so forgive me. Okay. It's non-existent. But I sound like a Yankee trying to say German because I am. Okay. So here we go. The Amish. No, that's not it. Here we go. The smile was not friendly, and this is gloss. The smile was not friendly. We shall see, my young friend, we shall see. The German officer took a few steps and faced the villagers. He lifted his arm in a victorious straight arm salute and shouted, "Today is a great day for Germany. We have come back to the Rhineland, the heart of our country. Our great Führer has ordered the reoccupation of this region to show the world that we are not toadies and lip fiddles who lesser men or lesser countries can push around. We are Aryans, the purest race on earth. The world will soon find out they should not have humiliated Germany. Germany should have dictated the terms of that treaty in Versailles, but the traitorous Jews and communists betrayed us. Chancellor Hitler has canceled all the reparation payments to the so-called allies. Now, we stand as the one nation that can light a beacon for the rest of the world to follow. Today is a great day. I wish you all to celebrate. Give praise to our victorious German army and our great Führer, Sieg Heil." And that is an excerpt from the Amish menorah, part of the Amish menorah anthology collection. And so, Patrick, like I said, was saying, it's very atmospheric. And as I was visioning this scene in my mind, it would almost look like a dark movie. Like if you were to put this on the screen, it would be dark because there's this underlying shadow hanging over this town when the Nazis mm-hmm. come in. And of interest, one of the things
yes.
that you said that I thought was fascinating, you said, you know what? They were lured by the things that this man said. Who doesn't want to be told? Like, I use myself for example. You are a queen of Egypt. You come from the purest
mm-hmm.
race. You come from a line of strong lineage. But we do when you're saved by the blood of Christ. So you do that because nothing that you did is not your birth. It's his blood that does it. But in our sinful
yes.
ways, you know, who doesn't want to hear you're the purest race? Who doesn't want to hear, oh, you are the best that we have, you Amish and Mennonites? And, I mean, they're drunk on that. And historical-wise, Hitler was very charismatic. I don't know how, because we're looking at it from a historical standpoint, but he was very charismatic, and he brought a broken country back together again. And I like how you
yes.
use this small Amish village in Rhineland to depict that. And that was, I think, a fascinating part on your term. I particularly was struck by GERD, and I'm probably saying it wrong. I'm not thinking about the anti-reflux disease. I know I'm saying it wrong. So, it's GARD, GERD. I want to make sure I say it right.
GERD.
GERD, thank you.
Yeah.
GERD. And
yeah.
GERD, you know, he's just trying to live his life. And He hated the fact that his life was being set by someone else. And I like that because with the Amish fiction out there, they tend to be very content with how things are, it seems. Not every book, obviously, but it seems. But he's like, I ain't really feeling this, you know. So, Patrick,
yep.
Before I move on to the next story in the collection, what were some of your thoughts and what has been some of the readers' thoughts with the Amish menorah and what have they said about it?
Well, they like the story. And mm-hmm. and the thing that I tried to do with the Amish menorah you may or may not know this, but back in the 70s, Christian Publishing made a totally determined move to move away from Christian literary fiction and mm-hmm. move into a kind of writing that appealed to mostly women and was written mm-hmm. by women, easy reading. And so
yeah.
literary Christian fiction basically disappeared. And what I wanted to do with this was that I wanted to begin to push my own envelope in my own writing, and I wanted to push back toward literary fiction that's about Amish people as opposed to Amish fiction. And so people have been struck by that. They've been struck by the fact that this is challenging. The reading is challenging. The language is challenging. It's not an easy read. None of these stories are. They're all, you have to stay focused on the story, and I think that is what the reward is going to be found in the fact that readers are really focusing in on these stories, and I'm glad to see it.
And we're talking today to Deb Hackett of Elk Lake Publishing, as well as Patrick Craig, Amos Wise, Tom Nye, and Willa Carpenter as we share their anthology called The Amish Menorah. It's available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. So make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy today. When we come back, we're going to go to the next story in our collection. We're also going to be talking to Deb because I want to get her thoughts interwoven throughout our conversation. And you're more than welcome to join in by calling in at 646-668-8485 and then press 1 to be live on air, or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag Right Stuff, with your questions or comments. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guest on the Right Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
Hi, friends. I'm Dr. Mike Spaulding, inviting you to listen to great Bible teaching on the Transforming Word radio show and podcast. All shows are available on iTunes and Stitcher. Search for the Transforming Word and subscribe for notification of new shows. You may also listen to every episode from my website, www.thetransformingword.com. In addition to the Transforming Word, I want to make you aware of my interview, news, and opinion show, Soaring Eagle Radio. If you're interested in engaging conversations related to a variety of topics not covered by typical news media, then check out Soaring Eagle Radio. You may subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher, and you may listen to every episode on my website, www.soaringeagleradio.com. For more information on my ministries, please email me, Pastor Mike at cclohio.com. Again, that's Pastor Mike at cclohio.com. Thank you for listening to these shows, and please leave me a note when you do. God bless you today.
Authors, are you looking for a new way to get your book in the hands of new audience of targeted buyers? Then a virtual book tour is for you. Right now, virtual book tours is an excellent opportunity for you to introduce your book and who you are as an author. Launching your book is very important. A virtual book tour will connect you with readers. We at WNL, we specialize in book tours, book blasts, radio tours, cover reveals, and Facebook chat. Promoting and marketing your book is what we do. Online publicity, the exposure and the publicity is what you need. Let us help you reach new readers and a new audience. We take care of everything so you don't have to. We set up the tour for you. We connect you with bloggers to advertise your book by way of interviews, guest posts, and reviews. If you are an author of a newly published book, have an upcoming release, or just want to give a previously self-published book, New Life, A Virtual Book Tour Is Your Answer. Check our tours out at www.wnlbooktours.com. Visit me on Facebook. I am the owner, Paulette Harper.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to the special edition of The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. Again, so very glad you are here with me today. We're having a fantastic time as we showcase the hot-off-the-press Amish fiction anthology called The Amish Manure, written by the six men of Amish fiction. That's right, we're talking to Patrick Craig, Amos Wise, Tom Nye, and Willard Carpenter. This book is not like any of the Amish fiction that you're used to. It's hard-hitting but gentle, humorous, and mournful. There's so many wonderful stories in this short collection, and we definitely want to thank Deb from Elk Lake Publishing for putting this together. And Deb, one of the questions I had to ask you as I was listening to Patrick's response on the other side of the break was the timeline of these stories, because the stories go from 1936 and they kind of go back and forth. And I think Patrick, by placing Patrick's book first in the story, it really leads us into this very realistic trend of Amish fiction that each of these men bring. But what was your thought process behind having Patrick in the front? Because I think it just really sets the tone for the book.
It does set the tone, number one. Number two, it's one of the longer stories. And number three, Patrick was the impetus behind getting this whole book together. So collectively, we all thought he should go first.
Oh, okay. So it's practical reasons. I thought maybe like the main
reason
was to, you know, set the story, because it's very atmospheric. Like I said, if I were going to put this on the big screen, I would have it look almost gothic-like because of this overlying shadow in the Amish manure. But that totally changes when we go to the next story in the book by Will Carpenter, and that is A Cloudy Day. And Will, one of the things I liked about your story is that you have this almost Romeo and Juliet thing going on, but not quite. And the people who have discovered Christ aren't really quite accepting everything about it because they're hanging on to certain things. And you kind of alluded to this when you were talking about your approach to the realism of Amish fiction. And so you kind of talked about it a little bit, but let's go a little more in depth about A Cloudy Day, but make sure don't give away any spoilers.
Okay. I'll try. It was exposing in this, the hypocrisy of Hannah's father, who was excommunicated because of his faith in Christ and not wanting to stop his sharing Jesus Christ to the community. So he was shunned for that. And then, but he didn't want to leave the community. So basically he started his own community, and his own community was a little bit more liberal. And he brought in other, not only Amish believers in Jesus Christ, but he also, there were other people from outside the community started going to church with him also. And he wanted to hold on to the ordnung and the rules and his role as the father and the head of the house, and he wanted to hold on to that and all and everything that that had to do with. So when his daughter fell in love with an English boy during her rumspringa, that didn't go over so well because they were thinking that she had a lifelong Amish friend that he and his Hannah's father and his friend whose son used to hang out with Hannah, and the two, they thought the two of them were going to end up after the rumspringa was done, coming back into the community and becoming part of the community and getting married and having babies. And that's their plan and not her plan.
It's interesting you say that, because as I was reading A Cloudy Day, one thing that I think drives men crazy, and I will be the first to say it, is that women are fickle. I will admit it. Women are fickle. I have said it to the world. They now understand that. And some of you are married. Some of you have been married more than once. And you can definitely attest to the fact that women are fickle. And in this story, the first thing that came to mind was that Hannah, quote unquote, liked the bad boy. And I was telling another author friend of mine a couple of weeks ago, I said, what is it about women in our fiction that we like the bad boy? Now, even though the bad boy in your story isn't a biker guy or some mafia prince, you know, treating his love interest like crud and then taking her off into the sunset in his car, Ferrari or whatever, you know, the bad boy in this case is the English boy. And I felt bad for Abram a little bit, who was the guy they thought she was going to be with, because Abram, he's like, he's doing right. He's staying, you know, with everything. He's on board with what the dad's doing. And she's like, nope, I'm into the English boy. And I was just thinking, like, women are so fickle. I bet you if Abram had become a motorcycle gang guy, she would like, oh, I have to choose between the English good guy and the motorcycle Amish boy. Who will I choose? You know, so I just love that. And what I want to do really quickly is read an excerpt from A Cloudy Day. Again, this is one of the stories in the Amish Manure. Available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. And he says here, this is Anna, Hannah speaking. What community, and I don't know if this is Dade or Dad, but I'm assuming it's father. Okay. What community, Dad? The new community begun by you and Isaac because you learned the Ornd Nong is wrong? The Bible says we should love one another. That love is born of God. And those who love, that love know God. How is it love that you will shun me by the same law that you disagree with, the law that now shuns you? You are not to interpret what that verse means. Jacob's face is grim. We, the elders of the community, will decide what the law is. Jacob smacks his hand down on the table. James responds forcefully, I'm a man, and I have studied God's word. It tells me you are to be respected, not obeyed without question, but respected. And also in the same verse, you have a responsibility not to tempt your children to anger. You will not tell me how to raise my children or how to care for my family. What do you know of the Bible? You are at your age, and English besides. You can go now. James starts to rise. I see how it is. Thank you for your time. And that's an excerpt from A Cloudy Day, which is of the anthology of the Amish Manure. One thing I got to say, as I was reading this, I was thinking to myself, okay, the halo has definitely cracked over this Amish guy, because at first I was rooting for him. I was like, you know, yeah, he's breaking away, learning as grace alone, through Christ alone, through faith alone, you know, thinking all that. And all of a sudden he does this. I said, I don't like you anymore. And I'm thinking, like, why would you say this? Like, you just came out of a bad situation and you're making it worse for your daughter. But then I think, and you can tell me, Willard, was it really about the law, about being part of the community, or was it that his baby girl was growing up? Because that is his daughter, you know, and you're a father, and you know, you must know what it's like to see your daughter fall in love with another man, because you're her first love most of the time, you know. So tell me a little bit about what your thought process was behind that.
It was nowhere near like my daughter and my relationship. Mm-hmm. I was very conservative, but I listened to my daughter. And my daughter, if a guy wasn't up to standards, she would toss them out. My wife and I would say she would toss them out like Kleenex. So when Eli came around, he was a good Southern. He was a good Southern boy of Baptist heritage, and he from a Southern goat farm. Father was a Marine. When Eli came along, and he was at the Citadel at the time, there was just no question that Eli was it. So mm-hmm. Now, as far as Hannah was concerned, it had more to do with the law and he being in charge, and that no one should question him, even though he questioned the bishop, and that he, you know, was the center of everything that went on there, and everything had to revolve around him.
That's a good point you make, and I'm glad you mentioned it, because as I was reading, there's all this conflict going on. That's what's really unique about this anthology, is this conflict. And we're so used to seeing the Amish in like this glass bubble, and this bubble can't be broken, and we want to keep people in this bubble. But it's interesting, like you said too, Willard, that there are people like, not Willard, I'm sorry, Patrick, like you said, with Cicely Yoder, you know, how she left the Amish because of raids. And that's the interesting thing. Just because they're not using, you know, electricity or they have a simpler lifestyle doesn't mean that they don't have these questions of life. And I really, truly love how this anthology touches on the realism that no matter where you are in life, whether you are the richest man in the world or the poorest man in the world, whether you have lights, whether you're not, that someday something is going to happen that you're going to find out there's a God-sized hole that only God can fill. And it may happen through subtle means. It may happen through overt means. But eventually, all of us are going to come to a place in our lives where we discover that. It's no different from the English and no different from the Amish. And that's one thing I enjoyed about this. So, Willard, you know, you say you're going to continue the story of Jess and Hannah. So what does that look like for you? Is it going to be another novel? Is it going to be with another anthology possibly? How's that going to look?
The last story revolved around the Amish community, and this story will revolve more around the English community with the Amish community in the wings, where we still touch on the friction between her and her father, and much mm-hmm. less her mother.
Okay. Well, yeah, my mom, you know, and I could have shot you, Willard, by the way, because you ended it just like that. I could have seriously shot you because I was waiting for the rest of the story and I wanted to find a death, but she published it. And so she knew this was going to happen. And I'm like, oh my God, what happens next? What do you mean it's over with? So, yeah, so this is a very good anthology to all of our listeners out there. This is a very good anthology called The Amish Manure, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. Now, Deb, I got to talk to you about the third one because Jerry Iger wasn't able to be with us today. But the third story is just a preview of a larger text that you're going to be publishing too. And that one is called, that one is called When Hearts Break. And I was particularly interested in this one because this one actually starts off a little darker than some of the other ones we've seen so far. Tell us a little about this story, and without giving us any spoilers, that Jerry wrote for us.
I love When Hearts Break, and it's written extremely well because it's a story of two women in love with the same man and how one of the women feels that she's better than the other woman because of the other woman's background and what happened to her. And there's conflict and there's misunderstandings and, you know, they get married to other people. And it's just a wonderfully diverse, complex story that starts at the ending, so that you have to read the rest of the story to find out why that ending happened.
Another thing I liked about the story, and this is something I recently came into knowledge about, even though I wasn't surprised by it, was that at the end of the story, there's notes from the author where he says that it's a story about abuse in the Amish community and the far-reaching effects of the lives of the two sisters. And so then he just, you know, right. makes you want to just, you know, strangle him again because you want to go get the book now, which is phenomenal. And there was recently an expose about this. In July, thank you, so I don't have too long to wait. But there was recently an expose about abuse in the Amish community. And I think a lot of people were shocked to find that out. But what this anthology does, and any of you gentlemen, feel free to answer when I ask this, what this anthology does is expose that just because they're simpler lives, just because they're out there wearing the hats and the clothes and the buggies and all these other things, doesn't mean they do not need the saving grace of Christ. And I think this anthology is really going to open the minds of readers to understand that you have a duty to evangelize wherever you go. He says, go into all the world and what? Preach the gospel, right? And it's everywhere. And so any of you can feel free to jump in as you tag on this about why it's important to be evangelizing in our communities, no matter where we are, whether it's in the urban communities or in the Amish community.
I find today
I was just going to say that as we see all of the things that are going on in the world around us today, I don't know about you folks, but it gives me a sense of urgency, a feeling deep in my heart that the Lord may just be coming back soon. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of people that don't know Christ. And so it gives us a sense of urgency in our hearts to just go out and tell them, look, I'm just going to be blunt with you. This is the truth, and you can believe it or not, but I'm going to tell you anyway. And that, I think that's a role that we need to be playing here as Christians in this world the way it is today.
For sure. I was thinking about John 16:33. He said, but be of good cheer, I have overcome the world. And that's the good news that a lot of people don't know. He said, in this world you'll have tribulation, but be of good cheer, I have overcome the world. And that's to the Amish too. And when that expose came out, I was, like I said, I wasn't surprised because, you know, sin is sin. You know, I wasn't surprised at all, but I know some people were like shocked. They thought, oh, this is the last place where sin lives. I'm like, no, sin's everywhere. You know, we're all children of our father, Adam, so it lives everywhere. So, yeah, but that's why I want people to know who's listening to what we're talking about, this book. It's a wonderful tale. There's the romance that you want. There is the conflict that you want. There are very common tropes within the anthology, but it has a wonderful, realistic theme to that. And what we're going to do is take a quick short break. When we come back, we'll be talking more with the men of Amish fiction, Patrick Craig, Amos Wise, Tom Nye, and Willa Carpenter about this new anthology called The Amish Manure, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. So make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy today. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guest on the Right Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
Conflict is expensive.
That's TWR President Lauren Libby.
And this is Get Hope.
Emotionally, financially, relationally, it diverts valuable energy essential to accomplishing just normal activities that we're involved in every day. A study of on-the-job issues ranked marriage and career conflicts as events that rob people of personal peace and productivity. You know, Jesus came to resolve the ultimate conflict between humans and God, and he's still resolving conflict today. A conflicted relationship that comes before God in prayer suddenly gives way to avenues of forgiveness and reconciliation. Got a big conflict in your life? Well, tell Jesus about it in detail, and you'll be surprised at what happens.
In today's chaotic world, isn't it good to know there's hope? And if you'd like more hope, Lauren Libby has resources available,
including a free 30-day devotional he'd be happy to send to you.
Get yours today at GetHopeRadio.com.
If you are an author looking to gain visibility for your books, then AuthorShout.com is the place to go. We have a wide variety of affordable products and services to include a member zone that will help you get the word out about your books. Our team here at AuthorShout.com specializes in creating stunning digital products to include book banners, teaser videos, book trailers, book covers, and a whole lot more. So what are you waiting for? Stop by AuthorShout.com today and let our team connect you with a world of new readers.
Christian authors and writers, welcome to Readio. Readio app, developed exclusively for showcasing Christian fiction and nonfiction ebooks and audiobooks. Losing sales due to incorrect algorithm influence categorization? Books lost amongst non-Christian content? Readio allows you to reach your target audience who's eager to devour your Christian, faith-based books in a variety of subgenres. You write in a niche market. Readio solely caters to it. Become a content contributor and receive early notification of when you can start uploading your content. Go to twotigersllc.com and sign up today. Readio, the app for great Christian books. Follow us on social media at twotigersllc.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff Here, the special edition on WPJC 104.5. I'm having the most wonderful time talking to my guest co-hosts and contributors today, Deb Haggerty, Patrick Craig, Amos Wise, Tom Nye, and Willa Carpenter, as we showcase to you the hot off the press new anthology, The Amish Menorah, an anthology written by the six men of Amish fiction. Now, this isn't your regular Amish fiction. This fiction is full of conflict, romance, danger, mourning, sorrow, even a little bit of speculative elements as well. So I want you to love on my brothers today by going to Amazon.com or wherever books are sold and pick up your copy of The Amish Menorah today. And once again, thank you so much, Deb, Patrick, Amos, and Tom and Willard for being with me on the show. I'm very excited to go to the next story in our collection, and that story is The Silo by Thomas. Now, The Silo is a little bit different from the other offerings in this book, and I like that because it gives you a nice eclectic view while still remaining in the Amish genre. So, Deb, when you read Tom's story, what were some of the things going through your mind as you were getting this anthology together?
As I was first reading the book, I was struck by how kids are kids regardless of where they're being raised with. And forgive me, Tom, I've forgotten his name, competing with his friend across the field to see who could plow more. And I was also I was also struck by how misunderstood the Amish were by their community and by the people around them who were not Amish. And it reflects so much our society today. I mean, all you have to look at is what's going around now in the world with all the conflict here between white and black. It was the same between Amish and English in Tom's story.
And that conflict is one of the reasons why I want to talk about it, because when you're dealing with conflict, it's easy for you to jump on one side and stick to that. But I think people generally want to fall on one side or one other. They don't want to really think it through. They want to hurry up, make the decision, and then go from there, which is why you have all this rioting and looting going on right now, as if that's actually going to solve a problem when all it does is exasperate it. But Tom, in your story, you're dealing with it in a unique way. So go ahead, tell us a little bit about your story. If you can, try not to give us any spoilers, but if you do, it's okay. It's all right. We're still going to buy the book anyway.
Okay. So, my story is about a young man named Harvey, 14, and it's about his family who is misunderstood by neighbors. I've gotten to be close friends with a lot of Amish that are actually really kind, genuine people, true believers, and sometimes people just on the outside look at them and think, oh, they're so backwards and old-fashioned, and they don't give them a chance. They're working with animals. In this story, this young boy, Harvey, is competing with the neighbor boy to see who can get their fields plowed first. And because he's really hurrying with his horses, he runs into a little trouble with his dad. His dad is not okay with that. His dad is like, that's not treating the horses the way you should. I want you to slow down. And so this conflict is within Harvey about, you know, obeying his dad or beating the neighbor boy. And meanwhile, a neighbor sees these horses being worked, and she's upset and assumes that the dad has pushed the boy to work this hard with his horses. And that's the beginning of the conflict in the story with neighbors that are misunderstanding and jumping to conclusions about who these people are and what their motives are.
And I want to read a quick excerpt from this one. I'm going to start in chapter 4. It says, Harvey, and he's talking to his little sister. Harvey started a question with his name to gather all his attention. How can people like our new neighbor be in such a bad mood when the world is so full of happy things? Harvey studied his younger sister's face before answering. He hadn't realized how much she looked like her mother until that moment. Her sandy brown hair smoothly pulled back under her covering. As with mother, she had a lovely tan complexion with light freckles on her nose and cheeks. Mom's brown eyes were easier to see because they weren't squinted with a smile as often as Mary Elizabeth's. Mom did have the same happy face, though. Her smile just seemed more relaxed and mature than Mary Elizabeth's. Harvey tried to explain the mystery he couldn't quite fathom himself. I guess some people have grown up seeing all kinds of scary and horrible things on TV and listening to it on their radio. They are so used to everything being bad in the news, they feel sad. They forget to listen to the birds singing or play with kittens and puppies. And I thought that was rather insightful for a young man. And I was like, you know, we really should look at kittens and puppies and just be looking at the blessings all around us. But what are you trying to say through the vehicle of Harvey and this conflict that that's having that we can apply to our own world today? We kind of mentioned it earlier, but go ahead and expand on that for me.
Well, I guess my original idea is to give people an idea of really who the Amish are before they jump in and start guessing, and to encourage people to step back and try to find out a little bit more before you jump to a conclusion. And that is something that we all should do in so many areas. But I wanted this Harvey, the idea was for this Harvey to be learning a hard lesson about what's really important in life. And his competition with his neighbor seemed so big to him at the beginning, but by the end of the story, that just wasn't too important. What he really realized was important is just the value of really knowing his family and appreciating them, and learning a hard lesson about why his dad has the rules he has, and that the rules are necessary for safety and for peace, and that rules are not all bad, but there are good rules. And that good rules, there's good reason to obey them, I guess. Does that kind of give you a...
That does help a lot, because I think about how people, when they break the rules, we have all kind of chaos. But then people will often say, too, that some rules are meant to be broken. And so there's that constant balance back and forth. But the biggest is that you learn by not just assuming things about someone else, and by letting that have an opportunity to build a relationship and build a trust. And conflict usually will either break people apart or will bring people together. And so I really appreciate that about your story, Tom. Tom, what were some other, when you were getting feedback from your readers and people who enjoyed it, what was some of their feedback?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think. I feel like, you know, there's an issue out there with people accusing the Amish of animal abuse. And I have become keenly aware of that because I have a Facebook page called Amish Horses. And a number of people have tried to approach me or attack me because they feel that Amish should all be looked at as being evil because they think they're too hard on horses. Well, I know a lot of Amish people, and the people that I'm friends with, I feel are very respectful and actually think of their horses as being almost a family member. They just love and adore their horses. And so, you know, I've had people question me on that and say, well, yeah, but they, you know, they drive them hard or their horses are sweaty. And so I've had people question that. But otherwise, my readers are mostly kind of intrigued with just the interaction between the family and the little sister with each other and with their older brothers. And I think that's something that the story is fun for And also they have to work together to work out a big struggle with, they get in trouble with the law. So without giving anything more away.
I want to read a comment from Sandy. Sandy is from Satellite Beach, Florida. Sandy says, most of all, I love the community, how everyone helps each other. Sandy, thank you so much for the conversation. And, you know, Deb, I want to talk very briefly about Murray's part in this story. And, Tom, thank you for just, you know, sharing that with us, because we're getting close to the time, and I don't want to get too far ahead, but I do want to make sure we touch on Murray's story. So, Deb, tell us a little about Murray's story, because Murray, you know, he couldn't be with us this evening. So tell us a little about his story and what drew you to his story in particular.
What drew me to his story is that it was so out of the ordinary. It was just the opposite from what you would normally expect a situation to happen. In his story, a very upstanding, strong Amish man becomes the sheriff of a Western cow town. And that's just highly unusual, because the Amish are against bearing arms or using that kind of force. And the sheriff says, I'm not going to use force. You know, I won't carry a gun. I won't do this. And for years, the town follows that and the cowboys that come in. But the conflict is how people can come to realize that you don't need guns to keep order, and that someone who has strong convictions can have a role that is very out of the ordinary without setting their convictions aside.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a nice romance inside, which kept me going as well.
I am a sucker for a romance, I will admit it, and Willard knows the most, but I am a sucker for romance, for sure. I definitely am. So I do write romance, so sweet romances, so yes, so definitely for sure. And it gets me next to a comment that we received from Linda. Linda is from, let me get her up here, from Belfast, New York. And Linda says, I love their simple faith and community support. The Amish have moved into all the farms around me, and when I read the books, I compare the books to what I have learned firsthand. Linda, thank you so much for the conversation. And I thought how intriguing that Linda would leave that comment right when we get Amos's story, which is Amish for the Summer. And this one is a very amusing but also very heartfelt story that I enjoyed. And just to real quickly get to one part here, because I love how the beginning of the story begins. If I could find it really quickly. Oh, there it is. I'm just going to read the beginning, Amos, before I ask you some more questions. The beginning says, Samuel Morse and Diane Sullivan were born the same day in the same hospital just outside Barnville, Pennsylvania. That was the only common thing they shared. Diane was born to a well-to-do family in the city. Her father was second in command at McManus Construction, the largest home builder in the area, and her mother ran a small bistro that was the place to have coffee and biscotti in town. This young lady had never known hardship or hunger. Samuel, different story. The only reason he was born in a hospital was due to a buggy accident, putting his mother's midwife in a room on the floor above her. He was born into the local Amish community. His days were filled with school and work. Eventually, the toil of labor would become his life and how he earned his keep. Samuel's father and mother both worked on the family farm for food and for the little coin his uncle had for their wages. You see, the land belonged to his uncle John Boiler. And so with that, let's talk about Amish for a Summer, because we have the spoiled brat in Dee Dee, and then we have her intermixing with the Amish. So tell us a little bit about the story, Amos.
Well, it's a story about a redemption, really. Dee Dee is a bad girl. I generally believe in good in everyone, but when I started writing Dee Dee, I had a hard time finding any good in her. And eventually, as happens with most people of that ilk, she ended up in the wrong place at the wrong time, and she had her come to Jesus moment and had to stand before a judge.
Yep.
Don't want to give too much away, but because her father had some connections, he managed to get her a what most of us would consider a dream summer, being placed with an Amish family to live among them.
Mm-hmm.
For obvious reasons, this spoiled little girl didn't much think very well about the concept of spending the summer with an Amish family doing the kind of work that they do day in and day out.
Another thing I found kind of amusing is this is in the beginning of the book, so it's not a big spoiler or anything. Her first word is herself. That made me laugh. Like, really? Your first word is not mama or dada. It's Didi. And I was thinking to myself, okay, you're set. You are so selfish. And then his first word, just to put them together, compared to was Gott, which is God. I'm assuming that's God in Amish fiction. And I was just dying. I was like, I know where this is going, and I love it already, Amos. And one thing I liked is how she has to do some of the chores that the Amish do. And as I was reading it, because I'm not going to go too deep into it, I don't want to get too many spoilers away, but as I was reading it, I was like, I am so glad I'm not Amish. I'll be honest with you. I was like, I'm so glad I don't have to do that. But that is the kind of like the charm of it, because of this simple lifestyle, because you have this opportunity to be more in tune with who you are as a person, as well as the work around you. I think that's the charm of the lifestyle that a lot of people see. So, Amos, in your thoughts, as you were writing this particular story for this anthology, were you trying to show the comparison of the ultra urban girl mixed with this Amish family, or what other themes are going on besides redemption?
Well, the main plot here is the redemption of this poor girl.
Mm-hmm.
But I also did want to, show that no matter how far gone you are, if you can find a way to slow down, find a way to pick up a Bible, you're going to be surprised by what you're reading in it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the lines that in there was that, when she picked up the Bible, she was surprised not to find any of the hate and discord she was told existed on every page.
Mm-hmm.
If you only know the Bible through what other people tell you about it, you don't know the Bible.
Right. I thought that was a good part in there, too, because she did think one thing. She thought one thing. And then she read, she's like, oh, that's not in there. And she was surprised by that. And I think a lot of people would be surprised. And I remember I was listening to a YouTube video or something, and in one of the comment sections, the guy said, Jesus didn't really exist, so why do you believe that in the book? And I said, I wanted to say, idiot, all you have to do is look it up, and you know that Jesus as an actual person existed, but you're simply regurgitating what someone else told you. And that person regurgitates the same thing. So I really like that aspect of the story where she's discovering these things on her own through the events that happen in this story. And so that's certainly not last but least, but I hope we've given our listeners a chance to understand what the Amish Menorah is about. It's a very eclectic book, anthology, with some great writing by some great men of God who are just writing these stories. And so, Deb, you've listened to us talk to each of the authors and gotten their in-depth personal view about it. What are some of your thoughts?
I'm very glad Patrick brought me the idea and that I've had mm-hmm. the opportunity to work with these gentlemen. They mm-hmm. all have been wanting very much to get their stories out in the world and to get the idea that it is grace, the grace of God that saves us. It isn't following the rules. It isn't following certain customs. But it's God's grace and wanting to get that word out to the public, which is what Elk Lake Publishing is all about, is getting God's word out and drawing people to Jesus Christ.
Patrick, what are some of your final thoughts? I want you to also have an opportunity to give your social media outlets. So first give your social media outlets and then give us some of your final thoughts as we get ready to close our show today.
Well, you can find me on Facebook at my Facebook page is real quick here.
He said, what
Facebook.com/Patrick Patrick E. Craig, and my Twitter is Patrick E. Craig, and my Instagram is patrick.e.craig, and my Facebook, and my website is patrickecraig.com. So pretty easy to find me. And just final thoughts about what you've been saying. I want to go back to one of the very first things you said when you said that a lot of people don't think that men can write romance. And I would direct them to the books of Zane Grey, who not only wrote adventure, but was one of the best romance writers ever to set pen to paper. And all of his books have a tremendous romance in them. Usually they're not even resolved until the last two paragraphs of the book. And so if you think that we can't write romance, ladies, you got another thing coming.
I love it. I love it. What about you? What about you, Willard? What are some of your final thoughts? And please be sure to give your social media outlets.
I'm looking forward to the next project for Christmas. That has really challenged me. As far, I usually come up with titles right away, but I have to think on this one a little bit. So the title is going to be the Christmas Rose, which has some history to it also. And listen, you can find me. I love chatting with people on my Facebook site. And they can just look up Willard Carpenter, and I'm there all the time with a black Bailey Western hat on. And my site is facebook.com/DeMelun, DEMELUN 1066. 1066. And my website is authorwillardcarpenter.com.
And what about you, Tom? What are some of your final thoughts along with your social media outlets?
Okay. Well, my final thoughts would be that, you know, the title, The Amish Menorah, kind of struck me as maybe perfect for this collection because a menorah is a candle with, I'm not exactly sure how many wicks, but each step with a number of separate flames. And so I kind of thought of this book as being a book of several of each of us six men shining a different light on Amish lifestyle. And so I'm hoping that that's what people find in it, is that they're getting a different light shined on each different aspect of the Amish lifestyle. And I hope we can continue that in our Christmas collection. If you're wanting to find Thomas Nye on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, it's simple. Just type in Amish Horses. That is my handle on, I have a blog, amishhorses.blogspot. I'm on Twitter as Amish Horses, Instagram, Amish Horses, Facebook, Amish Horses. So once you find one of those, it'll help connect you to the others. So I hope that keeps it simple and makes it easy to find me.
And then certainly, last but certainly not least, Amos, what about you?
Well, I would just like to say that I am incredibly humbled and grateful to be in this group of tremendous authors. I like to think of myself as a comic relief for the men of Amish fiction. these guys write such deep and touching stories, and you know, I'm the guy who finishes it up and tries to put a smile on your face before you go out the door. Like to think that we've done some of that, and folks who read the book, I hope will come out of it smiling, but also thinking about, you know, maybe it's not exactly what I thought it was. And that's really what we're shooting for, is to create that next level of Amish writing. I'm easy enough to find on Facebook. It's facebook.com/author Amos Wise. and that's the best spot to find me.
Well, I do have to challenge you a little bit, Amos, because Patrick did have a funny line in his story that made me burst out laughing when he said, you know, you say Hanukkah, and he was like, it's like a bone caught in the throat. And when he said that, I just died. I totally died when he said that, Patrick. So I thought about the movie with Meet the Parents, the sequel to the movie Meet the Parents, and Barbara Streisand said, you have to go, ha, it's like the popcorn stuck in the throat. And she goes, she said that, and then he said bone in the throat. I died. So you're not just the only comic relief. You know, all you guys had that, even in like some of the little smaller things, some of the smaller works, there was some element of humor there, which lets you know that everyone's so multifaceted. We're not just dour and simple, clean living and all that. You know, we have issues and we laugh. Mm-hmm. We do laugh. And then if you want to connect with Murray Pura, you can simply go to MurrayAndrewPura.com, and he's also on Facebook as well at Facebook.com/Murray.Pura. And if you want to connect with Jerry Eicher, it's Facebook.com/Jerry.Eicher.7. And last but certainly not least, Deb, tell us how we can connect with you. And also, are you accepting submissions?
I am accepting submissions. My guidelines are on our website, which is how you can find me. It's Elk, E-L-K, Lake, L-A-K-E, Publishing, INC.com. And you can find me on Facebook at Deb Ogle, O-G-L-E, Haggerty, 2 G's. And you can also find the Elk Lake Publishing, Inc. website on Facebook. So you can get to me through any of those three means. I invite you to look at ElkLakePublishingInc.com's website. We've got a lot of excellent authors and some great books you can find out about there.
And happy birthday to you, Deb, as we celebrate 4 years of Elk Lake Publishing.
Yeah,
happy.
Thank
well,
you.
I said, well,
it's
happy
been a great 4 years.
Publishing company, you know. And so What are your final thoughts, Deb, as we get ready to close our show tonight? What is your final thoughts?
I'm glad to have the opportunity to present writers of such varying styles and varying degrees of literacy. That's not the word I'm looking for. I'm looking for literary writing. These guys come at their tasks from different angles. I'm enjoying that. And I'm very much anticipating the anthology that will be coming out for Christmas. You'll get to meet them all again.
Oh, that's awesome. We'd love to have you all back on the show and have you back during that time, because I would love the opportunity to showcase you again. So thank you, Deb, Patrick, Amos, Tom, and Willer for being with me on the show. And I cannot wait
thank
to have you,
you
guys back and have you back soon.
Thank you.
Thank you, Parker,
and,
so much.
Thank
and
you,
we were
Parker.
Talking today to the men and the young woman behind the anthology, The Amish Menorah, is available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. Make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy of this wonderful anthology today. Let me tell you, this is not your regular Amish fiction. This Amish fiction is hard-hitting. It's sorrowful, mournful, humorous, in-depth, atmospheric, anything you can think of. So make sure you go ahead, love of my brothers and my sister today, by picking up your copy of The Amish Menorah, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. Thank you for joining for this special edition of The Right Stuff. I'm the Queen, Parker J. Cole, and you have a wonderful, absolutely glorious, blessed day.